I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
K-Row. I've been there. K-Row.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
This is Rachel Herndon Dunn, editor of the Missouri Times, here with my lovely co-host Becky Lohman of the Catalyst Group, and of course, Ben Peters, also of the Missouri Times. We have a very special guest today, our newest writer at the Missouri Times, who will actually be asking us a few questions. But first, thank you to our sponsor, the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. So welcome to the Hashtag Middle Edge podcast, Michael Layer.
Hello, glad to be here.
And I had you, it was kind of funny, I had you write six questions and send them to me because we were only going to use three, because normally we talk about three things. And Michael, in an epic plot twist, sent me 10 because...
Overachiever.
He was thinking the exact same thing I was.
You're already making us look bad. I'm not into it.
I know. So I narrowed it down to three questions. What is your first question, Michael?
My first question is... that I've been hearing a lot of good things about freshman legislators. So specifically, how would you measure the success of freshman legislators this past season? Is it normal for them to have such an impact as they have?
And we had, as a preface, Michael is from South Carolina and he's fresh out of college. So he has basically landed on Mars and everything he knows is kind of, it's secondhand. And we were kind of talking about this earlier, the freshmen and their success. And it's interesting. As soon as freshmen walk in the door at the Capitol, they're being judged from every angle. And there's an interesting group of legislators on the Democratic side for sure. There's Crystal Quaid, Bruce Franks, Peter Meredith, who have been absolute rock stars. And they seem popular on both sides of the aisle. They're smart. And Crystal Quaid especially, she's been very savvy. She's on the budget committee. It's a big deal to be on the budget committee your freshman year. Both her and Cody Smith, who's a Republican, are on the budget committee, and they've taken it to heart, and they've very early started understanding some of the issues. Ben, what do you think?
In terms of freshman legislators, I think that this current class is stellar. Like, some of the things that they've been able to do already is... worthy of rock star status already. We've seen them take on a number of issues because it's literally the scenario, you know, pro sports. You walk in and you have to start day one. You don't have time to learn. You are the first round draft pick. You have to play day one.
Especially in the era of term limits.
Right. So they don't have a lot of time to get the ball rolling and get used to things. So they have to come in and they understand that they're in that position where you're not the most knowledgeable person, but the things that they have done over this past session to ensure that they are in that kind of position, that's phenomenal. We've seen, especially in terms of budget, some of these freshman legislators literally working throughout the entire night to understand what's put in front of them. I mean, how many times on social media did we see some of these guys tweeting pictures and yep, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and they're sitting in their office still reading over budget bills. So, you know, they've had to take on a pretty significant role and then step up to it. So
I think it's interesting because you see these freshmen come in, you know, freshman Democrats only know a Republican governor, which their colleagues, that is very different from the world that they entered. They've never had a Republican governor, right? And so same with the Republican freshmen. They came in with a Republican governor. Things were possible this year for them that were never possible for their colleagues. And so you kind of see maybe Democrats realize that they don't have that final safeguard in the executive branch anymore. And so there's sort of, fear isn't the right word, but just an urgency to really ensure that they do everything they can to throw themselves in front of that train. And then the Republican freshmen are energized because things are possible. You can send a bill to the governor on tort reform, like Representative DeGroat did, and get it signed into law. So I think it's just a totally different mindset than their colleagues have seen on both sides of the aisle. And I think when you want to talk about what makes someone successful, you know, you have to really think about what, not everybody comes in wanting to be speaker. Some people say my goal is to be transportation chair, right?
Absolutely.
And so you kind of have to look at and say, what have transportation chairs done in the past? What have speakers done in the past? So it's kind of hard to define exactly. Everybody kind of has their own unique style. And I think that's always funny. I think we all can look and say, this is exactly what you need to do to be speaker. This is exactly what you need to do to be, you know, general laws chair. But everybody has their own way and their own style, and I don't think there's a perfect formula, but I definitely think being honest, working hard, and developing relationships gets you where you want to go, generally speaking.
And there's another aspect that I think is worth mentioning. The Republican caucus is very, very strong. Whenever these freshmen were running for office, the caucus was out there supporting them. And so they had a primer before they had their briefing. They knew what they were walking into before they walked into the building, because they've had this network of support from their colleagues. Whenever there's 118 of them, it's easy to form a very quick network and have the resources right there at your feet. And between HRCC and the actual legislative caucus, there's just been a lot of support for freshmen.
Yeah, you have a big team that's ready to jump in and help you, and there's definitely the bandwidth to do that, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even, like, right now, there's a bunch of freshmen who are, or they're not freshmen, there's a bunch of candidates who are running for 2018, and you will see members out at their events knocking doors and trying to get them ready to go and be the rock stars of tomorrow.
It's sort of a snowball effect, right? The more Absolutely. People you get, the harder it is to, the easier it is, in theory, to win seats, and the harder it is to lose seats. So, yeah, I think it just kind of snowballs into what the supermajority you see today.
Absolutely.
As the Missouri Times continues to gain popularity, how do you see the organization change in the next 5 years?
That's obviously a pretty loaded question.
Yeah, no kidding.
The Missouri Times of 2017 is a little bit different than the Missouri Times whenever it started in 2013. It's grown substantially. And as the editor, something I would like to see is more legal coverage. There, we cover the legislature and the executive branch like white on rice, and I love it. But there's a whole other, not even other ballgame, there's an extra donut ring outside of the legislature. What happens to the laws once they get enacted? What happens next? And as they get processed through the legal system, that's something I'd love to see us cover more. And that's one of the reasons I'm so excited about the autumn of the attorney legislative series, because we need to hear more about what happens to the laws next. And we saw that recently whenever HUD came back and said Missouri no longer qualifies for HUD funding. And it's essentially the list kind of awkward, but we need to be looking at that. We need to be looking at like what's happening with commissions we cover, but there's a lot of them. So hopefully the governor succeeds in getting rid of those.
Some days, because... whenever you're trying to keep tabs on, what was the number, over two, ends up that two or three people lose sight of some of those things. Yep. It just doesn't pan out very well.
Becky, as one of our most loyal readers, what would you like to see from us in the next 5 years?
You know, I agree. I think the attorney coverage is really fascinating. But I'm a policy nerd, like probably everybody listening and all everybody at this table. So I agree. I think, you know, there's a reason that when Jay Barnes speaks, everybody listens, right? Because not everyone has that understanding. We can all read a bill. We think we get it. But there's just that piece that it takes a lot of time in the building to really get there. And so I think that's why you see leaders like Scott Sifton and the, you know, attorneys are so valuable. And I know we like to dog on them sometimes, but they're crucial to the legislative process, right? Because, you know, pointing out things that I don't have a legal mind. So I think the attorney coverage is great. I think I love the magazines. I think they're fun. Because, you know, we are like this little weird dysfunctional family in Jeff City, and we all know everything about each other. And I think that's what makes it awesome. I think that's why everybody loves working in the Capitol the way that they do. I mean, it's hard to find somebody that goes to Jeff City every day and is miserable, right? Everyone, right. It's sort of sick and twisted how much we all like being there. And so it's kind of fun to have this little universe of inside baseball where we, you know, you can do a deep dive on Senator Ryan Silvey and everyone's lockstep in the things that you're talking about. It's not to the masses, it's to our own little family.
Well, that's a nice little thing about writing for the Times, too, is that you don't have to play catch-up when you're writing these things.
People, you can just dive right in.
You already know that your readers know at least certain things. So you don't have to spend a lot of time explaining things, whereas you might have to do it at a different publication. So you get to the heart of the matter a little bit more quickly. Mm-hmm. And that's what's nice.
And, you know, another thing I'm pretty happy about is we're now to a point where we can find so much original content that we don't have to write the same thing every other publication does, because our readers read them too. Mm-hmm. And that's something we'll continue. And I love it. You'll continue to see original content. And I love that, especially just the legal realm is kind of the gray area between Missourians and the legislature. They're kind of the liaison of walking laws through and how they're going to be enacted. And that's something I look forward to covering more in depth. And it's going to be an easy segue in 2018 with all the initiative petitions, all the ballot measures. And I hear there's going to be more tort reform in the legislature, so it'll be easy to dive in there too. What's your third question, Michael?
What do I have to do to network effectively as Scott Fawn?
So Scott Fawn,
that's an interesting premise. We're assuming that Fawn networks effectively.
Yeah.
Right? So I would challenge the premise of that. I just got to give Scott a jab because he's not here, so we have to make fun of him.
We have to.
Right? If he wants to not be made fun of, he can come to do the podcast.
I always think it's funny, like, if you don't know who Scott Fawn is, it's weird that you're listening to this podcast. but Scott is the publisher and owner of our paper, and if you ever spend time with him in the Capitol, he will walk through the halls almost like a candidate, shaking hands with everyone, like remembering birthdays usually. It's kind of interesting because I'm not as outgoing as he is. So whenever we're at the Capitol together, it's Scott and his jubilant socialness and me just wanting to get work done.
you know, it almost feels like, in high school, you watch the popular kids walking down the hallway.
Yeah.
It's almost to that extent, except I guess I don't want to throw something at them as much.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like, Scott has, like, transcended the high school, like, jock syndrome.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't care if you like him or not. He cares about what issues.
But isn't that like the definition of a cool kid? Is the kid that doesn't care if you think they're cool? Like that's what makes you cool.
That's
is that
like
you
the
don't
upper
care.
Tier
right. That's like some psychological, you know, jujitsu right there. Not caring if people like you and then everybody likes you because you don't care.
But I will say, if you want to know as many people as Scott does and you want to know issues as deeply as Scott does, the thing he's good at is identifying key stakeholders in issues, whether it's utilities or tax credits, and he gets to know every single facet, and he's just candid with them. And I know he does this sometimes on the TV show, and I'll do this sometimes with like news stories and sources that I'm working with, is we'll play dumb. And it's
that's on purpose.
Yeah, we'll do it on purpose.
not give away secrets here.
I know, but it's a lot easier to have an issue explained to you accurately if you act like you don't know anything about it. And it kind of puts the ball in someone else's court and makes them feel good.
Yeah, I think you get a little more, and I think you get a little more honesty because you're coming at it from a place where they feel like they can convince you of their position, right? As opposed to me thinking you're against me. You hold your cards a little closer to your chest. I think you address the topic a little differently. So kind of just opening it up and letting them define the terms of the conversation, I think, is why you get honesty on the show and in your reporting.
Absolutely. And another thing, like, we can't do this as writers, editors, but Scott can. He's very honest. Probably not to a fault. There's not a single bird in the state who doesn't know where Scott Fawn doesn't stand on the Cardinals. but, you know, he finds something also outside of politics that people can relate to him about. And even if they don't like baseball, they can relate to his passion for sports in general. Most people in Missouri have something they love, whether it's fishing, as we learned recently with Rich Aubuchon, or football. Like, Ben and I both love football, or Becky likes concerts. but he relates to people. And he's a lot less threatening than me, who I just don't smile as much as I should. Scott always smiles. I guess whenever you're on TV, you get used to smiling.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that Scott can basically hold a conversation with anyone about any given topic.
Yeah.
And that's the amazing thing is, you know, every now and then when you're talking to somebody, you'll recognize that I have no idea what we're talking about, or I don't care what we're talking about. So Scott, on the other hand, is able to keep that conversation going probably far longer than it ever should.
Yeah. And if all else fails, he'll posture himself as just a simple hillbilly from West
Virginia. I was just going to say, I think that self-deprecation also, you know, he wants you to be the authority. You're the smart one, and you're just explaining something to him, and he, you know, doesn't know, like, enlighten him. Right. I think it's sort of brilliant.
I can't do that. Like, I'm just a simple girl from the suburbs of East Jackson County.
Yeah,
like,
the St. Louis County simple girl doesn't really play well for me, so I have to figure out a different angle.
You have 5 questions for us, Michael.
I do. Which political television show closely best resembles the Missouri government?
I would say Parks and Rec. And it's mostly because, like, I operate on a level of honesty where I'll walk into someone's office and they just, like, look up to me and they're like, I need waffles. Or they'll just look at me and just say something, like, candid, like you'll see on Parks and Rec, where there's this amusing dysfunction where at the end of the day everything kind of works out, which, as some of our attorneys from the automotive attorney would probably disagree with me a lot about that. But Missouri government's a lot less frustrating whenever you take it amusingly, or with breakfast food, with a meat tornado, as Ron Swanson enjoys.
So I would say a little bit of Veep, because I do think we're all just as weird as those people on the show. That's like a mockumentary of us. Like, we're all weirdos. And then just because I think it's cool, like, I'll say a smidge of House of Cards, because I want to pretend like we're cooler than we are, right? We're really a bunch of weirdos, but, like, I'll pretend like we're Claire Underwood-esque. Like, I don't think we are, but we'll pretend.
So I'll jump in with my answer here, because I was literally going to say that we are not House of Cards.
Every time I think that
we're not, I'm like trying to make us be the cool kids, guys. Yeah. Come on.
Sean Odell told me, like, shortly after I arrived in Jefferson City, because he was just like, Rachel, we're playing checkers here, not chess.
Yes.
And House of Cards is like sink field level chess.
So, House of Cards, you know, there's always deeper meanings, there's other stuff going on that you never know.
And a lot of death, a surprising amount of death.
Yeah, so I don't feel like that's Missouri per se. Like, I feel like we're a little bit on a more simple spectrum. But I will give us some credit. I think that there's a little bit of, you know, maybe the West Wing in there. Just some of that kind of
thing. I was just trying to make us feel cool, guys, but, you know.
Every time I think about the West Wing, I think of the SNL skit, or maybe it was like Mad TV before it got discontinued, where they're walking and they just keep walking faster and faster and faster, and eventually they're like running and someone falls.
That's what I feel like. I actually do feel like that in the Capitol.
I was going to say, that might be the most accurate picture there.
100%.
The hardest lesson you can learn in the Missouri Capitol as a female is, if you're going to wear heels, you need to get rubber soles.
Oh, it's not even just females. Like, I'll admit, I have fallen down the stairs at least twice now. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
As long as no one sees you.
Oh, so when you're going from the press office, nobody knows.
Why are legislators running so fast? Why are they?
Everyone's in a hurry.
There's a lot of questions. Term limits, man. They gotta get this done.
Policies.
Eight years. I've gotta run. I've gotta run this amendment onto the floor.
It's like football.
Exactly.
Run on, run off.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so what's the next question?
My next question is, which celebrity with no outspoken political affiliation would make the best elected official?
Ron Swanson.
He's not even a celebrity, that's a character.
I know.
Christopher Walken.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Or John Voight. Like, he plays a lot of political figures, so I might be biased.
I'm going to say, like, Morgan Freeman as either presiding over the House or the Senate, just to hear his voice all the time. That would be fantastic.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, President Freeman, we've seen that in the movies quite a bit. I am not a
person. He's, like, played the voice of God multiple times. Right. He's done Planet Earth. It is, like, so...
So are you contending he would be a good elected official just because of his voice?
Yeah, I'm setting a low bar.
I can do that, actually.
I'm setting a low bar.
Third question.
If you were a Disney character, who would you be and why?
So I'm going to say Belle from Beauty and the Beast. Because I love to read, and I feel like I relate to her nerdiness. And also, I know all of the words and all of the songs to that movie. I used to dress up as Belle and sing and carry books around with me in my parents' basement growing up. So
I'm
going
to
go with Belle.
To this that I like to discuss. So I'm a brunette. Becky is a blonde, in case you don't know us. Growing up, I always felt like I wanted to identify with Belle the most because she was one of the only brunette princesses.
Yeah.
So it kind of surprises me to hear you say that. And I always actually wanted to have red hair because I loved Ariel like so much. I obviously have legs, so I don't really identify her.
maybe I would have that luxury of everybody being blonde, all the princesses being blonde, and so I didn't really care. But I like Belle. Yeah. She went after and saved her dad. She wasn't scared of the beast. Like, she's a badass. Totally into it.
But I will say, on a personal level, I identify with Ariel. I love antiquing. I love leash hunting. I love collecting human history. Like, I've got almost every blue book that's ever been created printed in my basement. Like, I especially love to collect Missouri history. We're actually sitting here with, like, State of Missouri seal coasters. So I guess I would identify with her on that level. And, you know, sometimes I'm a little rebellious. If Scott were my King Triton, I don't know. I'd be like, no.
You sure Scott's not the flounder in this scenario?
Oh, my gosh.
No, he's not.
So what Disney character would you be, Ben?
So my answer usually would be the Beast.
No, why?
That's typically.
So you're suggesting you're the Beast to my Belle because I don't know how I feel about that.
That would really
weird.
That's really weird. Here's where I was going with this. I normally would have answered that, but I have been recently told that no, that is not correct. If I'm a Disney character, I am Hercules.
There you go.
Michael Bolton.
Yes,
Michael Bolton. That's a good one.
You obviously get the guy who, you know, wants to do a lot of good and maybe doesn't have the best brains to accomplish it. So
interesting.
It's kind of fitting there. A little clumsy at first, but
interesting.
There you go. I think that fits.
See, I really identify with Wally. Like, I always feel like
the robot.
Yeah, okay. I always feel he's going around. He's trying to do the best he can, but ultimately, like, he can't. You know, he just kind of like. He has like a humble failing. He always tries to make me feel really sorry for you. You know what? I think I admit,
I hated that movie.
Are you serious?
I fell asleep during it. So what's your fourth question?
Oh, wow. What is your preferred song to karaoke?
You know, we have asked other people this, and we like let them think about it before.
I already know.
Okay, what do you got?
Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know.
Wow, that's really vicious.
Yeah.
Wow.
It horrifies people, and that's why I love it.
Like, that's a really aggressive song.
100%. And I ad-lib it, you know? Like, I kind of go off track and start yelling at people. It's like a funny thing that I do.
Let's say, as long as you
I've done it multiple times. I've had the cord pulled on me when I've been screaming in Atlanta's words that you want to know at a karaoke bar.
Wow. I will say, whenever Travis left us, rest in peace, Travis.
Oh, boy.
I took the boys out to Doc Steinhaus and we karaoke'd, and Ben and Travis loved the song Toto's Africa, and I have a video of them doing
that. That's good.
Like, I signed them up, made them do it, and then they left me there with Scott, and I ended up like karaoke'ing a bunch of Garth Brooks, which is not my vocal register. Actually, I don't really have a vocal register, but I decided this morning I should probably go on more of a Billy Joel.
Okay.
What you got, Ben?
So normally, if it's just me, I would say anything by Garth Brooks, but I will tell you that my younger brother and my older sister are much better singers, and we used to actually go out to the bar together and do karaoke, and it was required that one of the brothers had to do a duet with the older sister every time. And the go-to song there was always anything with Johnny Cash and June Carter.
Mm-hmm. Is your vocal register that low? Or you just really try and no one says
anything? Yeah, I can do whatever when it comes to singing.
Oh, okay, right. So. I'm sure you can, Ben. What's your fifth question, Michael?
What is your favorite emoji?
The American flag, obviously.
That's a good
also,
one.
Face palm. Been using face palm a lot.
Yeah, the face
lately.
Palm.
I don't even know what that looks like.
The face palm is that. It's good.
It's okay. Good, and you can change her hair color, so like she looks like me. We're all like pulling out our phones to double check.
So I really like the face palm. I really like the shrug.
The shrug smiley?
The shrug. I like the sarcastic question. You know, I like the hand on the face, inquisitive. And then I also like the gritted teeth one. I feel like I drop that all the time.
Oh, that's good. I also like the salsa dancer. I don't know why.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I use salsa dancer a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ben, what you got?
I think we all know that I don't use emojis a lot.
Okay, Justin Alferman.
Yeah.
We'll go through your tweets. We will find every instance you've ever used an emoji.
Is there a middle finger one? That's probably
there. Yeah, there is.
And you can choose your nationality.
Yeah.
So that's probably my most used one because, yeah.
Okay, very good.
There you go.
I have not received that one yet, thankfully.
Well, there's something about not doing that to your boss or something.
Yeah. You're pretty wise. Wise advice.
I don't know. I like to be honest. Anyway, of course, thank you to the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring the podcast. And thank you, Michael, for joining us and throwing us some questions. I hope we have given you some Missouri wisdom. Apparently, what there is of it. We'll be back next week for a new episode of the #MoLedge podcast. Thank you for listening.